I'm not a member of the Socialist Party. I launched a new movement precisely not to be trapped by the current political organization, because I think that's a big mistake.
That was Emmanuel Macron in 2016 explaining who he was to baffled American reporters. At the time, he was a political outsider who'd just launched his own party. But 6 months later, he was president of France. What happened? Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of interviews with some of the world's leading economists. My name is Tim Phillips. When President Macron was sworn in on the 14th of May 2017, he promised to shake up the old political order. But the old order had already been turned upside down. In the presidential election, the traditional candidates had trailed in third and fourth behind Macron, who had promised to be neither left nor right, and the extreme right-wing Marine Le Pen. Why did France's voters prefer two populist outsiders to the political parties that generations had voted for? That's what today's guest, Daniel Cohen of the Paris School of Economics, is going to explain to us. With Yann Algon, Elizabeth Besley and Martial Foucault, he is one of the authors of the CEPR discussion paper called The Rise of Populism and the Collapse of the Left-Right Paradigm, Lessons from the 2017 French Presidential Election. And I'm hoping he's going to tell us what these lessons are. Daniel, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hello, Tim.
Can you explain for people who don't live in France the scale of the political earthquake that took place during the 2017 election?
Well, it's simply the first time in the history of the Fifth Republic in France, which was created by the General de Gaulle in 1958, that the second round of the presidential election, which is a critical election in France, was opposing two candidates coming from neither of the two main parties which have governed France. So yes, that was absolutely extraordinary. It's a bit as if in the US you had Sanders against Trump, that is, two complete outsiders.
And of course, until recently, Emmanuel Macron's political party didn't even exist.
Macron's party was created in the March of the year 2016, a year ahead of the election. So that's just extraordinary because this guy came from nowhere. No political record, below 40, just a complete outsiders that totally overran the traditional parties.
Many of the existing explanations for how people vote focus on macroeconomic trends or their socioeconomic status. In this research, you've looked instead at subjective data, how individuals see the world. Why is that?
Well, if you want to understand where Macron and Le Pen, because they are really symmetric one to the other, where they come from, you cannot just rely on the usual apparatus of looking the social classes, the neighborhoods that they come from. This remains very useful to understand who voted for the left, traditional left guy, or who voted for the traditional right guy. It's very important to know their social background. For instance, if you take as a control instrument the neighborhood where you live, it is very important to understand where will the traditional left-wing or right-wing candidate come from. But if you want to interpret or if you want to simply understand who's voting for Macron or who is voting for Le Pen, that doesn't do. You need to understand how they feel, whether they are optimistic, whether they are pessimistic, whether their degree of life satisfaction is high and low. And this is really the novelty. It's Macron versus Le Pen are people against people rather than social classes against social classes.
Where did you get this data?
We had a fantastic panel data of about 20,000 people. And we followed over the course of the past 2 years these people. And we knew exactly not only who they are, who were their parents, but also how they felt. We had a lot of measures of a subjective nature on their life satisfaction, on the coefficient of trust that they conveyed to other people or to the institution. So we could really dig beyond the traditional measures that people really usually rely upon, like what's your income, what's your degree of education. So we had many more data, and this is where we could find that subjective variables were very, very important to understand who voted for Macron and who voted for Le Pen.
You started collecting this data well before the election, so did you suspect that something unusual was going to happen?
there was something which was somehow predicted, and that was the showing of Madame Le Pen, the extreme right candidate. It was fairly well anticipated that she would enjoy the benefit of this populist mood. So we knew that there would be a strong showing of the populist candidate. And what was new is really Macron. That is, people thought that it would be the traditional right-wing candidate, Mr. Fillon, that would make it to the second round, if only because the left was in power. Mr. Hollande, the Socialist Party candidate, was in power for the previous 5 years. And of course, there was a lot of resentment, more or less correlated to the state of the crisis. But the right-wing candidate collapsed for many reasons. And one of them is that he was involved in cases of embezzlement and refused to resign ahead of the election. That opened the possibility for Macron to show up. But Macron phenomena, I think, is also part of this new anti-system wave, because, again, he was coming from nowhere. So he was preferred to the old outsider that was Mr. Fillon. So, yes, Macron was a surprise, say, compared to the expectation a year ahead of the election, but could be anticipated by this anti-system, anti-establishment mood, which I think has shaken the entire industrial advanced countries world and beyond in reality.
So effectively, you planned for one anti-establishment candidate and you got another one as well.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened. We bet on one and we had two. And that's definitely the novelty of the French situation.
You explain the old left-right paradigm as a choice along one dimension. You either support redistribution or you oppose it. Was it ever really that simple?
It was not that simple, but when you interview and ask people how do they feel with respect to redistributive politics, taxes, inequalities and so on, you find that it's very important as an item in favor or against redistribution for the traditional left-wing or right-wing parties. People are very concerned about more redistribution for the traditional left-wing and less redistribution, less taxes for the traditional right-wing. When you ask people voting for Le Pen, and that's part of somehow I would say the political economy paradox, they are poor, they are badly educated, they are really the underclass somehow of the French society. When you ask them about redistribution, you know, more taxation, more public spending, they are against it. They don't want taxes, really. And when you ask the Macron people, who are as rich and better educated, actually, than the voters for the traditional right-wing party, being rich, you would expect that they are against redistribution. In fact, they are more or less indifferent. And that's, again, the novelty. It's beyond the traditional politics because you have very poor people coming from the working class voting for Le Pen and who are not really interested in redistribution. And you have very rich people, those voting for Macron, who are not opposed to it. That's not their concern. And that's something that we could dig into through these polls and interviewing people on how they felt about it. When you analyze the sociology of the voters for the traditional left-wing party, or the sociology of the voters for the traditional right-wing parties, they share about the same level of education. But the left-wingers are poorer than the right-winger. The left-wingers feel that they don't earn enough given their level of education, and that's why they are in favor of redistribution. And it's exactly the opposite for the right-wingers. You know, they make more than what the level of education would suggest, and they feel that it is because of their own efforts, so they are against redistribution. So the traditional left-right opposition about redistribution is very much correlated to a sense of fairness. The left-wingers, they find it unfair that they earn so little, and the right-winger feel exactly the opposite. But when you look at the Macron and the Le Pen people, they are either very badly educated and poor or very highly educated and rich. So this notion of fairness is not there. It's a different opposition that interests them. And this is why the old redistributive politics do not seem to play a role in understanding why the Le Pen people or the Macron people antagonize each other.
Does this now also mean that models of how people will vote that are based on assumptions about redistributive politics have lost their power to predict results?
No, exactly. To summarize the paradox, the question is, why is it that the Le Pen people, voters, who are really poor, I mean, poorer than the rest of the electorate, why is it that they do not support redistributive politics? After all, they would be the prime beneficiaries of those politics. And I think this is the essence of the discovery that we have in this paper. When you look at the subjective variable as interpersonal trust, we call it IPT, which is the extent to which someone trusts the rest of the world, not just the Chinese or whoever, but trust their own neighbor, their own family, their colleagues at work. You find that the Le Pen people have very, very low IPT compared to the other candidates. And the Macron people, it's just the opposite. They have a high IPT. But the traditional left-wing parties also have high IPT. So what does that mean? It means that the Le Pen people, they trust so little the rest of the world that they are not interested in taxation because they feel that taxation would benefit, let's say, the immigrants, the people who do not work. And so taxation to them is not a solution because they don't believe that the amount of resources that would be transferred through the state would benefit to them. They trust so little the rest of the human race somehow, again, including their own family, that they don't want to have anything to do with redistribution. So the core of the paradox, and I think it's a bit the same thing for the Trump electorate, is that they are poor, they want protection, but they don't want redistribution. How do you manage that? How do you offer protection to this poor segment of society when somehow they don't want to hear about taxation and redistribution? Well, the answer is protectionism, is xenophobia. They want simply to be shut off from the rest of the world because in their interpretation, it's the rest of the world. It's the others who are the cause of the evil. So I think we have analyzed the reason why the very poor, let's say, Trump voters or Le Pen voter want tax reduction, tax cuts, not tax increase, as the traditional political economy would suggest. It's because the degree of trust that they have towards the rest of the world is so low that somehow they don't believe in the social contract.
You also found in this research that life satisfaction has influence on voting preferences, didn't you?
A very low or low life satisfaction explains why people are against the system, whether it comes from the right or whether it comes from the left. And a low level of IPT will explain why you want redistributive politics or not. But within those anti-system voters, you have the right winger who want protectionist policies, and you have the new left wingers who want redistributive politics. So somehow the anti-system shares the same hatred of the establishment, of the elite, in the case of France, of Europe, but they don't have a common platform. You see those contradictions at work in Italy today, because in Italy, the anti-system won the election, and you have a coalition of the Five Star Movement and of the Lega coalition movement, and one wants to reduce taxes, the other one wants to increase government spending, and that will not work within you. That's, you know, the battle to come. But you can see why low life satisfaction, which in a sense has been triggered by the economic crisis of the past 10 years, can in fact give rise to two completely different movements and parties which have very little in common in reality.
This explanation that you're giving makes perfect sense. So why is it such a surprise that this is what is motivating voters at the moment?
It took, I think, most people by surprise, because of the fact that we felt in 2017 that somehow the crisis which was triggered in 2008 was somehow coming to an end. So there was a sense of relief. Growth was back in 2017. So we had the feeling that the subprime crisis was about to end. And so what came as a surprise was the strength of the anti-system movement after 10 years of crisis when people felt that it was over. And this is where I think the analysis simply in terms of the consequences of the economic crisis of the past 10 years is insufficient. And I think there's really two crises. One is the financial crisis, the slow growth and a kind of discontent towards the elite. But there's something more, I would say, the end of the old industrial society, which really started in the 70s. For the poor segment of society, what has disappeared is a sense of ownership of the world in which they are. If you were a blue-collar worker in 1960 or 1970, you were belonging to a world that was highly unionized. You were working in factories. You have a sense of strength, of recognition of who you were. Over the past 30, 40 years, The old industrial societies, you know, slowly but surely disappeared. And the new blue-collar workers, they really work in the service economy. They are in the logistics. They are truck drivers. And they have lost a sense of belonging to society, which I think is the prime cause behind this very low coefficient of IPT, of interpersonal trust, because they are, for many of them, totally desocialized. You know, they live in some small cities away from the big centers. So really, the sense of belonging to a common world has vanished, which has created this sort of explosion, which, you know, came out in 2017.
Now that President Macron, and I suppose President Trump as well, are insiders, they're part of the system, does that change how voters will see them?
My problem is to maintain the politics in France as they are at the day of his election. That is, either you want to remain within the Euro, EU, you want to play by the book, or you want to challenge a system from outside with a risk of a huge crisis. And what Macron fears is a return of the old right-wing, left-wing politics, because that will not be another way for him to play the game. It's a bit the same thing with Trump. Trump wants to maintain the situation as being in tension. I speak for the people, while the other guys, you know, speak for the establishment. When Macron was elected, there was a wave of optimism in France. Now I think it's falling back. And in reality, I think Macron, like his predecessor, really depend on the way the economic growth will be resumed. It's really very important when growth is low, when purchasing power stagnates, nothing has really changed. People feel pessimistic. So for Macron, it's very important that the growth momentum is maintained to show that you'd rather, you know, be pro-system rather than anti-system, but not too much either, so that this remains the division. And that's more or less where we are. You know, Macron is much less popular today than he was a year ago, but the other parties fare worse.
Do you think that this left-right paradigm has collapsed permanently, or will it reassert itself in Europe?
I cannot believe that it will disappear permanently. I think we live in a very specific period, again, the conjunction of two crises. And so I don't think that this pro-system versus anti-system will be maintained forever, if only because the anti-system parties in power, like Trump or the Italian coalition, they will somehow demonstrate that they don't have so many remedies in the end. So if growth was slowing coming back, the number of anti-system voters were to be reduced a bit, because after all, Macron and Le Pen in the 2017 elections were ahead of the two others, but not by a wide margin. Then you would see down-to-earth redistributive politics coming back to the forefront of the analysis. But it depends on whether we move away from the economic crisis that we have known for the past 10 years.
Do you have any advice for traditional politicians about how they should be coping with this?
I think the traditional politicians, they have been behind the curve. They don't really understand what's going on. They don't feel the world as it is. This very low level of interpersonal trust, the fact that people living away from the big cities, they feel alone, abandoned. They have to think deeper about it than simply the big macro question, whether we should balance the budget and so on. That there's something in depth that the traditional politicians have to understand, which somehow the anti-system politicians have better understood.
Danielle, thank you.
Thank you.
Once again, the CEPR discussion paper that we have been talking about is called The Rise of Populism and the Collapse of the Left-Right Paradigm, Lessons from the 2017 French Presidential Election. It's number 13103. Danielle, one last thing before you go. Are you going to be doing more research on this?
Yeah, of course. We need to dig deeper. We need to better understand the origin of this very low interpersonal trust that is demonstrated by the Le Pen voters and more generally by the populist voters. We need to understand better what is behind this sense of despair of the voters who acclaim populist leaders such as Trump or Salvini or Le Pen in France.
Good. We'll be looking out for it. This has been a Vox Talk, presented by the Centre for Economic Policy Research. You can find Vox Talks on all of the major podcast platforms, and of course, there's 10 years of Vox Talks at voxeu.org/vox-talks.